Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harford. Jumpin' James Herbert. We've jumped into a series.
We have ourselves a series.
We have ourselves a kind of good series out of nowhere.
Yeah, thank you, Bismack Biyombo.
Thank you, Bismack Biyombo. Thank you, Kyle Lowry, for joining us.
DeMar DeRozan. The big three, man.
That is the big three of Toronto. It is Lowry, DeRozan, and Bismack. We've said it all year.
All year.
Man, what a fun game. That must have been great. Tell me about your experience covering that game and the atmosphere in there and that fourth quarter where the Cavs scored, like, I don't know, 10 straight times or something like that, and the Raptors just kept coming back and answering and the back and forth. Like, what was it like being in the building?
Oh, it was nuts. I mean, it was 14 straight possessions for the Cavs. You didn't quite know what was happening until, like, six or seven possessions into it, because, like, they scored in the last two possessions of the third quarter, but it didn't feel like they were really that close.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, they just kept running the same exact play over and over and over again with this dribble handoff from LeBron to Dele, and then LeBron would just roll to the rim, and Channing Frye would be on the perimeter, and they gave up a bunch of threes. And they never really stopped it. Like, they got a stop on one possession late in the game, but it was like an open shot that the Cavs missed. And then, yeah, they were just going back and forth. Like, Lowry was making tough plays. DeRozan was making tough plays. Corey Joseph hit a couple of ridiculous shots, one over LeBron.
That one over LeBron was crazy.
It was nuts.
Like, the touch on that was so, like, that reminded me of, like, old school Stephon Marbury, where he'd come in and just have those high floaters that kiss the glass.
Yeah. And the crowd was as loud as I've ever heard it. And
that place gets loud.
Yeah, I mean, it was insane. I think you're talking about an atmosphere where I they went into the game with some hope because they'd won game three, but with the way that the Raptors started that game and built the lead, they were so excited, and then at the end it felt like the fans kind of knew what the team needed. Like, they needed that extra boost from the crowd because the Cavs were giving them their best shot. I mean, LeBron didn't score for the last, like, I don't know, 5 minutes of the game or something. But, like, he was making...
They got the ball the hell out of his hands.
Yeah, they got the ball the hell out of his hands, and he was making perfect passes.
Yeah.
The Cavs were getting really good looks, and Kyrie made a couple of contested shots. There was an atmosphere in there that was like, all right, this is... Like, it befit the situation. Like, this was the biggest game in Raptors history, and I think I've said that about a few different games in these playoffs, but that's what happens when, for 21 years, you never get to the conference finals.
Right.
But, yeah, it lived up to all of the praise, all of the questions that, as a reporter based in Toronto, I've gotten so tired of, is, like, every off day, they ask both teams, like, what will the crowd mean? How, like, out of 1 to 10, how would you rate this Toronto crowd, whatever. There is a reason that it's become that big a story. I know they suck. Like, it's so boring.
It's so dumb. It's just like, hey, we want people to buy newspapers to read about how great you think they are. Like, come answer this question. Like, it's not just a Toronto thing. Like, it happens everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, it just happens, and they're just, and I find it's normally, and maybe this isn't the case there, but I find it's normally local TV people asking because they're trying to get a soundbite on camera for the for local news at night. And the players never like, oh, what a great question. Let me answer that. Like, it's just like, oh, yeah, no, we expect to be loud. You know, the energy's unbeatable here and blah, blah, blah. And it's just, it's the same thing everywhere.
The other day someone asked DeMar.
Same question, same answer everywhere.
Yeah. The best one, there's two that stand out that have actual memorable answers to questions about the crowd, was one time earlier this week, somebody asked, like, what do you think the crowd's going to do for you guys? And DeMar was like, well, have you watched a game here before? And then he went into an actual answer, but just that initial response was so perfect. And then last night, Biyombo said that Lowry was trying to tell Biyombo, like, I can't hear you when you're yelling out coverages because it's too loud in here.
Yeah.
And Biyombo was like, what do you want? Like, I'm by far the loudest guy on the court yelling. And he is. Like, he's really loud. But that's just the sort of situation it was last night. Like, it was a madhouse.
So, all right, the problems for the Cavs that I saw in this game was, one, Kyrie Irving looked like he had cement shoes on. Like, is he injured? I know he's not, like, 100% because no one's really 100% at this point. But, I mean, he just,
He keeps saying he's fine, but he, like, he's obviously staying with Kyle Lowry for him is going to be extremely difficult to begin with.
Right.
But it just, like, you almost feel bad for him.
Yeah, I mean, and the help was so bad. So, like, that first line of defense is horrendous.
Yeah.
With Kyrie trying to cover Lowry. But also, can I just say that having Kyrie Irving versus Kyle Lowry is really hard to keep the name straight, as we're like, because you want to say Kyrie, but then you fall into the Lowry part of it, and there's the Kai and the Kyle, and it's really kind of a pain in the ass for someone who's not actually good at talking. But the first line of defense is Kyrie Irving, just so slow to react and so, you know, so easily caught on screens for Kyle Lowry to get free, and then. Like, there were several possessions in that game where LeBron was the weak side helper, and he just never came over.
There was a possession late. It wasn't Kyrie. It was J.R. Smith guarding Lowry.
Yeah.
And Lowry just blew right by him and got to the rim. And when I initially watched it, I was like, that was horrible Cavs defense. And I went back and watched, and, like, Biombo's just holding Tristan
Just
Thompson.
Holding him. Just giving him a hug. A big old Bismack hug. It was great.
And Bismack's really good at that. Yeah. And well, Cavs fans were probably furious.
Well, they should be, because I don't know. Like, we talk about Tristan Thompson, and we're like, wow, how does he do it? How does he have the energy? Like, how is he such a good rebounder? And then you watch him rebound, it's like, well, he's grabbing guys, he's pushing guys constantly. Like, yeah. he gets away with a lot, which, hey, if you can get away with it, that's how you become a great rebounder, right? Like, there's only so few guys who just go and jump higher than everybody to go grab it. And if you're willing to outwork someone, the refs kind of give you that leeway. Like, Reggie Evans maybe has never had a legal contested rebound in his life, right?
But also maybe the best rebounder in NBA history.
Right, exactly. Like, because he's just so good at all those little tricks. So Tristan's good at those tricks. It was funny to see. It's funny to see Bismack using those same tricks, but he's just bigger and stronger. And so, yeah, like, they're working better, at least in the last two games.
And the Cavs were so concerned about Bismack that they'd sometimes have two guys boxing him out.
Yeah.
Which is why Patterson got that rebound late, the one that set up this DeRozan drive, where it looked like Channing Frye fouled him, was not called, and he banks it in off the glasses and falls to the floor anyway.
Yeah.
One of the many huge plays. Like, both teams were making amazing plays down the stretch. It felt like a really good playoff basketball game, and there have been a lot of basketball games in Toronto in the postseason. They've had 2 7-game series, but most of them, not great basketball.
No, most of them pretty unwatchable.
and it's been crazy to see them just suddenly find themselves against the best team in the conference at the exact right time, right when everybody thought that they were dead.
Yeah,
because they lose two games, they get blown out, and then suddenly not only do they rise to the occasion, they play maybe better than they've played all season. Like, it looked like the regular season Raptors, but also some of the defense that they're playing has been better than what they were doing in the regular season.
It's been really good. I do wonder, I wonder your take on this, because it seemed to me that there was a certain point where they were just like, all right, these guys are going to shoot threes. And so it's not that they tried to take them away. It's that they kind of, I don't know, they kind of just accepted it and, like, tried to contest what they could. But it just felt like the Cavs were just missing open shots. I don't know if that's a mischaracterization or mischaracterization of what the Toronto defense is doing. Like, is it they're taking the Cavs out of their rhythm even though they're seemingly getting open shots? Or are they just gambling it by not, you know, by taking away the rim as much as they can and not allowing these to, you know, to go up as frequently and as uncontested as possible, and they can just kind of hope, like, all right, well, maybe they'll regress to the mean and won't hit so many?
Yeah, I don't think they want to give up open looks, and there are certainly looks, if they watched the tape last night, that they would have liked to have contested better. But I do think they've definitely adjusted their game plan over the course of the series. I mean, they went into it, and, I mean, Casey was very straight up about it in that they've been a paint-protecting team all season. Like, that's been the number one priority. And they said, well, the way that Cleveland's been shooting the ball in the first two rounds, we're going to have to treat this a little bit differently. And they did all they could to run the shooters off the three-point line, but then they were giving up layups and dunks. And in the second game, they just committed a million fouls and sent them parading to the line. And as soon as the series shifted to Toronto, they found a much better balance. Like, their number one thing is still they don't want to let Cleveland get penetration and get all the way to the rim. And that's why Biombo has been so good, and he's playing so many minutes. And his energy in the fourth quarter is somehow just as good as it is in the first quarter. But then secondarily, they're trying to get out on the shooters, and they don't want to give J.R. Smith wide open looks. They don't want to give Channing Frye and Kevin Love wide open looks. They've had some of them anyway, and the Raptors have gotten a little bit lucky in that Kevin Love has just been ice cold.
Man, he looks so hesitant on everything. And obviously the big thing after last night was he steps on the ref's foot towards the end of the third quarter and then comes out and doesn't come back in the fourth quarter.
Second game in a row.
Yeah, second game in a row. Yeah, so part of that is, hey, the lineup with Channing Frye got them back into it, right? Like that lineup, like you said, they scored on what, 10 straight or 14 straight
14
possessions?
14 straight. Yeah.
14 straight possessions at one point. Like, all right, you can understand riding with that lineup, but at the same time, there is only so long you can ride that lineup. And once they stopped scoring every time, there were some real rebounding and defensive issues with it. Now, you can say, well, how is Kevin Love going to fix the defensive issues? Like, he's been defending much better in these playoffs than he ever has in his career. Mm-hmm. But there's still a very real liability there, right? And I'm not sure Channing Frye is much better or much worse, and he's a better three-point shooter, but Love's a better scorer and Love's a better rebounder. So at what point do you need to go back to him, or do you just you stay small and you throw Tristan out there instead? Like, did you think that Lou stayed too long with that lineup?
In retrospect, maybe, but at the time, I didn't really think so.
At the time,
so because,
it feels like it's fine, right?
Well, it just felt like it was such a close game.
Yeah.
And it felt like the Cavs had a lot of momentum.
Killing.
The Raptors kept answering, though.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that putting Kevin Love into the game would have really changed the dynamic of that. Maybe it would have. Maybe he could have come up with a couple of key plays. But the Cavs' offense was awesome in the fourth quarter anyway. I'm not sure it really would have made a difference.
Yeah, that's
fair. I will say it is odd to see him sitting on the bench for the entire fourth quarter, two games in a row. And you wonder if him stepping on the ref's foot had anything to do with it.
Lou gave a crazy confusing answer about it.
Well, Lou said after both games, he said he didn't think it would be fair to put Love in that crucial situation after he'd gotten cold sitting on the bench for so long. And I understand that thinking, but I don't understand it with somebody like Kevin Love. I mean,
this is
one
like
of your star players.
Right?
Yeah, I don't think that it would be that tough for him to enter the game and after watching for a little while, unless there's some sort of injury concern or some sort of confidence concern. And maybe he's just rattled. I don't know. I think he admitted that he's been a little passive and that he wants to fix that mentality. But maybe that's easier said than done. I mean, this is a tough spot to be in for the Cavs, who have all the pressure in the world on them, and the Raptors are playing free. And they're playing really hard. And I'm not sure if the Cavs can win without Kevin Love at least being, like, normal. Like, I don't think he has to be great. But I don't like the way this looks. Like, I know how good he looked earlier in the playoffs and toward the end of the regular season.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Raptors are doing anything that's, like, that special to take him out of that. I think he just got to calm
down. No, I don't
think
so either. I think he's getting a ton of great looks.
Yeah,
like he's
got to calm down and make the shot.
Yeah, when he's shooting in rhythm, even if it misses, it's not like he's missing. You know, like he's not crazy errant in these shots, right? Like they're going in and out, or they're going a little bit back rim or whatever. So it's not like his form is off. It's just he doesn't seem in rhythm within the offense.
And there was a shot last night. I don't know if they showed it on the broadcast, but he missed a three. It went sort of in and out, and then like right before running back to get on defense, he like sort of jumped in the air like a little frustrated hop.
Yeah.
And he did a fist pump, but like a like mad at myself fist pump.
Right. No, I remember that a lot from the Minnesota days.
And it's like you don't want to have a short memory after misses, right? Like you don't want to have to do that. You just want to go in the other direction. And clearly he's battling his own rhythm here, and he's getting pretty good looks. And maybe the Cavs have to run more offense to get him shots. But I thought, honestly, it almost surprised me how much they did look to get him involved in this game, because LeBron had made a comment before game four saying he had a plan for the game, but he didn't really say what that was. And in my mind, I'm thinking like, okay, he's just going to be as aggressive as hell. And he's going to try to dominate this game offensively and look to get himself involved first and figure out the rest later. But that wasn't what he did. I mean, they were playing basically the same way. LeBron was functioning as a passer, a facilitator for a lot of it. And I don't think that's bad or anything.
No.
But I do think there was a concerted effort made to get him involved, because the Cavs are at their best when all three of those guys are somewhat equal threats.
Yeah,
and it just didn't work last night.
Right, and Kyrie got hot, you know, kind of later in the game, but
he was going one on one.
Right, and he wasn't very good for most of it, for most of the game anyway, on either side of the floor. Love got 14 shots in 30 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, that's a lot of shots for a third option.
And with Kyrie, like, he makes these one on one plays that are just breathtaking.
Oh, they're great.
He'll hit these contested threes, like high arcing. There was a high arcing three he hit in the corner.
Yeah, that was
where
incredible.
I just laughed when it went in. But when, there was never a point in that game where when Kyrie scored, I was like, oh, the Raptors are going to be really mad about that possession. I just thought if he's making one-on-one plays, they'll kind of live with it. Like when the Cavs are killing you offensively, it's because the ball is moving around the perimeter and LeBron and Kyrie are creating wide open shots for themselves or for their teammates. And I just don't think that the Raptors would be that upset about Kyrie just sort of hijacking the offense and making tough one-on-one plays.
There was one three-pointer by J.R. Smith, I think in the second quarter, maybe the first quarter, where he caught the ball in the corner.
Yeah.
And like, it was such a bad pass to him. It wasn't in his pocket at all. And so he, like, had it on his hip and just went straight into his shot motion.
Yeah.
It looked so out of, and he hit the shot. And, like, as he catches it, it's in this weird position. And just because it's my love for JR, like, I thought as soon as he had the ball in that weird position, I was like, oh, he's shooting this. And,
yeah.
And there was no hesitation, and he hit it. And it was, I don't know why, like, it was just so funny to me. Of, like, you couldn't have caught, like, I guess you could have caught the ball with your feet, and that would be worse. But you could have caught the ball in a worse position to shoot. And he never hesitated to shoot. And, I mean, he took 11 threes last night out of his 12 shots. He hit three of them, I think.
Yeah.
It's weird how much, at least in the last two games, how many times I've thought, like, J.R. Smith may be more important than Kevin Love is at this point, just offensively for them. Because they, you know, when J.R.'s got it going, and J.R. seems more reliable than Kevin at this point, right?
I guess so. I mean, reliable is not a word I'd use about Kevin Love after these last two games.
Right. And
it would be stupid to just assume that he's not going to bounce back. I mean, just look at the team that they're playing against. Like, their two stars have looked alternately brilliant and hopeless throughout the postseason.
Right.
Last night, DeRozan and Lowry go off for a combined 67 points. They just look like they had an answer for everything that Cleveland tried to throw at them. They were so calm. They were so patient. They were really aggressive, too. And they just found their rhythm. And Love can surely find his rhythm again. It's just, we don't know, like, does that happen in the next game? Does it happen in the game after that?
Right.
The Cavs, I thought, really made that a priority in game four, but it didn't matter.
So, all right, DeRozan has back-to-back 32-point games.
Yeah.
Kyle Lowry over these two games went 21 of 33 from the field.
That's nuts.
That's crazy. I mean, that's the cool thing to me is these guys, like, both of them, at least in game four, like, didn't rely on free throw shooting. Right?
No.
Like they took a combined 8 free throws. They each had
the four. Raptors didn't get to the line in the first half.
Yeah, oh my God, that was an annoying thing on Twitter. I'm like, oh, they,
because the
Cavs didn't have a foul called against them until, like, what, like 9 minutes left in the second quarter or something like that.
Yeah, and then the crowd went crazy.
Yeah, the crowd, like, had this
applauding it.
That was actually a good shot. But it was, yeah, like, I don't know. Do you feel like they're missing calls? I shouldn't, because they do miss calls a lot, because it's a tough game to officiate. Do you feel like they're missing more calls than normal? I don't even know if that's a quantifiable thing. But
not really. I mean, I didn't love the call on Biombo when he met LeBron at the rim, and
that was
the second game in a row that happened.
Terrible call.
Yeah.
That was such a clean block. Like, that was a terrible call. And then there was a tough
There was
one.
Some contact below, but, like, usually...
Nah, that was a clean block. Like, he didn't get him with the body. Like, LeBron went into his body as much as he went into LeBron's body.
Yeah.
Like, that was just... LeBron got the call because he's LeBron. But there was one charge call. Or no, it was a blocking foul on Damari Carroll that was tough because LeBron didn't really dip his shoulder, which is kind of like the signifier of a charge a lot of the times in those possessions. Mm-hmm. And Damari was pretty decently squared up to him. You know, like, he was moving, but you can be moving as long as you're squared up. And you know, it's kind of a 50-50 call, and Damari got the call against him. So I didn't love that call either.
Damari flipped out a little bit.
Yeah, Damari wasn't happy. But yeah, for the most part, like I don't feel like it's egregious.
No,
I know Raptors fans feel much differently, and it's funny because Cleveland fans were complaining about the officiating too. So it's either that tells you they're doing a great job or a horrendous job. If both sides are like, there's no in between. But I back to my earlier point, like I love that DeRozan and Lowry were able to just play. Like,
yes.
They didn't worry about contact. Like, they just went out there and just were like, look, we can make shots. We haven't, like, maybe they've been saving them up all playoffs for these two games. But they just went out and made shots, and Lowry was phenomenal, and DeRozan was just really solid in complimenting him and carrying the offense at times. But I do wonder...
Even when LeBron was guarding him.
Yeah, even when LeBron was guarding him. And well, this was someone... Because I was kind of asking on Twitter, I was like, you can't go with Kyrie anymore on Lowry. Like, it's just, you just can't. And when the Cavs made their big run, it was Dellavedova on him. But it was, like, you just can't do it. And then the question from other people, like, well, can you put LeBron on him and take him off of DeRozan? And my thought was, like, look, you're, like, DeRozan's not going to kill you with 3 points, right? Like, if anything, he's going to work somebody for two. I would trust J.R. I can't believe I'm saying this. I would trust J.R. Smith defensively against DeMar DeRozan. Like, I think DeRozan's going to get the better of the battle, but I think J.R. is going to make him work enough to where I would put Lowry, or maybe I would just sub Shumpert into the game and throw him on Lowry.
I like the idea of Shump. I think JR has done a horrendous job when he's guarded DeRozan this series. Not to say he can't do better, but I think DeMar has kind of shut down that narrative about JR being this like stopper.
I don't know that it's shut it down. I mean, it might just be a bad matchup for him, but I think he's capable of doing it.
But Here's what I'll say on that. I think JR has gone from a normally careless defender who has the ability to defend when he wants to like a pretty consistently reliable defender in Cleveland because that's what the team needs from him.
Yeah, like he's not a stopper, but he's
and that's what I'm saying. Yeah, is okay. I think the conversation changed to like, oh, JR Smith has become this
lockdown
defense
defender.
First player, this lockdown guy, and I think DeMar has kind of been like, no. Like I can just beat this guy to the rim. I can rise up and shoot over him. I can trick him. He like JR fell for a pump fake on the first possession of game 3, which, I mean, in the playoffs, DeRozan has hardly gotten anybody with that anymore.
Yeah.
Because everybody knows it's coming, and he hardly even does the pump fake anymore when he used to be the king of that. But yeah, I don't love that matchup for JR, but I do think there's something to be said for just putting LeBron on Lowry and seeing what happens. Because everybody knows Lowry is the Raptors' best player. He is sort of their engine, as Casey likes to call him. But I think when Lowry's rolling and playing well, then it opens up so much for other guys. DeRozan said himself last night, it's like a cakewalk for me when Kyle plays like that. And I think it's sort of like, I remember reading a Phil Jackson's book when he talked about Chauncey Billups being like the head of the snake for the Pistons, and he realized too late that the way to shut down that team was to just do everything they could to take Billups out of rhythm. And I think that's sort of the same thing with Lowry. If you can get him to have a quiet night, it doesn't guarantee you a win. DeRozan can still go off. Valanciunas, who we should probably talk about, if he's back in the lineup, he can score for them too. Lowry's a really good passer. He can find guys for 3-pointers. But I do think it gives you a better shot if you can limit him. And
yeah, because Lowry's not like this crazy quick guy, right? Like his strength is his strength. That sounds really stupid, but you know what I mean. Like his power is his strength. So like,
and his brain.
Right, exactly. So like he's such a smart player that he knows, like it's almost like Paul Pierce-ish. In the way, like, Paul Pierce wasn't quicker than anybody. He just knew how to use angles. And Lowry's so good at using angles. And then once he has the angle on you, he's too strong to really cut that off.
Yeah.
And
he's quick enough to, like, blow by you if he gets that little sliver of space.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But he's not, like, this crazy quickness guy. Like, it's not like defending John Wall, right?
No.
I do wonder, like, is he quick enough to do that against LeBron? Because LeBron's still very quick and can make up for a lot because of his strength, but I do like it just sounds right because we've been used to like, oh, this point guard's going off, LeBron's going to guard him now, and now the fourth quarter's over.
Yeah,
I do wonder if that's there against Lowry.
Yeah, and every decision has its costs too, though, because we even saw it with LeBron guarding DeRozan. Is so much of the Cavs' defense is predicated on LeBron roaming.
Yeah.
And LeBron getting in passing lanes and starting the fast break where the Cavs are so deadly. And earlier in the series, he was on to Murray Carroll, and he was pretty much ignoring him, and Carroll wasn't making shots and making them pay, and that's partially why the Cavs were able to push the ball so much. And I think the Cavs' defense, especially when they have Love and Fry in the game, and even when Thompson is in the game, because Thompson is like a really good defender, but I don't think he's like a one-man defense. The Cavs' defense behind LeBron isn't that solid.
Right.
And if he's suddenly on the ball like all the time guarding Kyle Lowry, then that puts your other defenders, it puts more pressure on them. And I'm not sure that's what Cleveland wants either. And I think one thing Toronto has done is in the past two games, it's done a really good job of just exploiting the Cavs' sort of mediocre defenders, like attacking these guys one-on-one, simplifying the game. And if LeBron is on Kyle Lowry, then there are other matchups they can go to.
So, all right. So here's my question about DeRozan and Lowry is, and I don't even know if this is a fair question, but this is kind of my thought of, they were great, right? 67 combined points, like you said, like just phenomenal. They both shot over 60% from the field. They were amazing. But do they actually have enough help right now? Because granted, they won the game.
It was
close, right? And so that's what I'm wondering, like, they only have one other player in double figures. That was Damari Carroll, and he needed 12 shots to get 11 points.
Yeah.
Can they survive on just Lowry and DeRozan being as good as they were last night? Or do they kind of, I don't know if lucky is the right word, or were they just fortunate that they got by without another player stepping up on offense?
Yeah, I mean, they were fortunate that Lowry and DeRozan were that hot.
Yeah.
It's not like they didn't get any help. Biombo was huge in a bunch of different ways.
Corey Joseph made those two shots. Aside from a couple of shots, like, you didn't have, like Patrick Patterson had good minutes, and he was good.
He missed
overall.
Some open looks too,
yeah,
though.
Right. That's kind of my point. Is like, do they need another guy in rhythm? And I mean, I don't think like they're not going to rely on Terrence Ross anymore, right? Like, he only played 6 or 7 minutes. But do they need either Patterson, Joseph, or Carroll to really come up big to steal the series? Which, by the way, sounds crazy. Four days ago, it still sounds crazy. It does, but I think
but it's 2-2.
Like, I would still put all of my money on Cleveland. Like, I just don't think they're going to lose, you know, two of the next three games. But the fact that I kind of have to hedge everything that I'm saying about the series now, it does, like, that's remarkable. For like four straight wins, you've said this is the biggest win in franchise history for the Raptors. But they keep building on that, right?
And so they do. They keep finding different ways.
Right. From every point on, at least in this postseason, every victory is the biggest win in franchise history.
Oh,
which is
absolutely.
Which is both pressure, but also like kind of cool.
No, it's all gravy for the Raptors. And I think that's part of the reason why they're able to play with such confidence is that they don't feel the weight of the world on their shoulders like they did earlier in the playoffs. And I think, you look at the series going back to Cleveland now, and these games have been so different in Cleveland versus in Toronto. So you just assume that the Raptors will need more help offensively besides those two guys. And I don't think that's wrong. And Terrence Ross has had his moments in the playoffs. Valanciunas was a lot of the times their number one option early in the playoffs. Patrick Patterson has had his games here and there. Corey Joseph has sometimes looked amazing. Sometimes it's been like he can't make a shot. And they're going to need help from the supporting cast. I think that's an obvious one. I'm intrigued as to how Valanciunas fits into this. Casey said that he was ready to put him in. He almost put him in the second quarter, but he decided against it. But it sounds like he's definitely going to play in the next game.
Well, do they lose something there? Because Biombo's been so good?
Well, this is the thing. I just wrote about this. There's a plug.
Hey.
but I think this is a little complicated. Because he should help the Raptors' offense. I mean, it's always good to have another option so they're not so dependent on Lowry and DeRozan to do what they did, which was like heroic in game four. But you don't want to totally rely on that.
Right.
And simply the fact that Valanciunas deserves some attention when he has the ball, that'll make it easier for those guys to have lanes. He's a much better pick and roll partner than Biombo because you have to pay so much more attention to him.
Right, because he'll catch a pass.
Biombo has been catching the passes, but you know, like with Valanciunas, you can actually rely on that. Yeah. And I think clearly against the guys that Cleveland has been playing, which is Thompson, Fry, Love, Valanciunas just is so much bigger, so much stronger. If he's healthy, he has an advantage in the post, and you'd want to use that.
Man, I almost wonder if they have to go to Mozgov at some point.
And I think they might. And if to me, if you're Toronto, the second they put Mozgov on the court, it's a win for you.
Mm-hmm.
Not that Mozgov is terrible or anything. We saw him have huge games in last year's playoffs, but it's just they're so much slower with him.
Right, but he's been he's been so bad this year. And two, that kind of feels like a, in case of emergency, break the glass.
Yeah.
Situation, right? Like that's like that. If you force Tyronn Lue to go, all right, Mozzie, let's get in the game. I think, I mean, whether you win the game or not, that's a strategic win for you.
I think so too. But then the question
is, even if he plays well, it's still just getting them out of their comfort zone right now.
Exactly, and hurting their spacing, which has been so good in the playoffs. And I think, if you're the Raptors, the question is, can Valanciunas be good enough on offense that it justifies having him in there on defense where Biombo has just been amazing? And I'm not sure how long you can get away with him out there. I would maybe even consider him as a starter, even if Biombo's going to play more minutes, just to get him out there and get some rhythm and go against a guy like Thompson who is not going to be out there shooting jumpers on the perimeter. Like that might be what I would do if I was Dwayne Casey, but that's also risky. Like
you gotta wonder how healthy Jonas is. Like, all right, healthy enough to play is not the same as like Jonas is in Jonas form, right?
No, and even if he was in Jonas form, asking him to do what would be required of him in this series on the perimeter is a lot. Like, if you look at the Western Conference Finals, and if you just look at the Thunder, even in the second round, like a big part of the reason why they are where they are is how mobile Steven Adams has been on defense. And Valanciunas, I just don't think is doing that, even at his best, but especially coming off of a sprained ankle that's kept him out for like 3 weeks now.
Yeah. All right. So
that's fascinating, but I mean, that's another option that they have, right? Like when you're talking about giving him a third scorer, like that's the most obvious guy.
Yeah, for sure. Oh yeah, for sure. No, I mean, if he can play and he can be even like 75% of what he is, like maybe that's enough as a third weapon.
As long as you're not just exchanging his twos for like wide open threes that are going in at home.
Right. Yeah. It's gotta be all within like the flow of like the whole pick and roll off. Like I wouldn't just, all right, Jonas, go post up for 20 possessions. Like we're not adjusting that way. So I will be at game 5 in Cleveland, assuming my flights come through and they're all on time.
Talk to Corey Joseph about getting Kyle and Kyrie mixed up and saying it wrong, because he tried to say Kyle and DeMar yesterday.
Okay.
And he wound up saying Kumar.
Sure. All right. That'll be our bonding moment.
Yeah.
For me and Corey. So what are you feeling going into game 5 tomorrow night?
I mean,
I don't want to be dismissive of the Raptors, but it would shock me if Cleveland lost at home in game 5, even after all the turnarounds in game 3 and 4. It does feel like – it just feels like they should win this game, right?
It feels like they have a lot going for them in that it seems unlikely that the Raptors' incredible offense will travel and that they'll keep making those shots, those difficult shots that they made at home. And it also seems unlikely that the Cavs will keep missing as many open looks as they missed. So it seems like they have that going for them. It seems like the crowd will try to lift Kevin Love back up, lift his spirits and all that, and – the second that he becomes a great player again, then the Cavs ceiling is that much higher. But what I wonder is, what if this is a close game in the fourth quarter? And what if the Raptors are making a push?
The Cavs haven't had that much adversity in this postseason. The little they've had hasn't gone great.
No, the little they've had it in the last two games.
Right.
And I think it's hard to play like amateur sports psychologist and predict how the Cavs will respond.
Right.
But I do think it's worth noting that like throughout the year, there were all of these questions about the Cavs and are they really on the same level as these other contenders? And, oh, they just feel so much pressure and LeBron wants to win a title now in his prime and blah, blah, blah. And so that pressure can be motivating, but it also can be kind of stifling. And I mean, I've seen it up close in these tense Raptor games in the first two round, how a really excited, passionate home crowd can it can pump you up, but it can also put like a really tense feeling in the arena. And I think if the Toronto Raptors, who, yes, won 56 games, only one less than Cleveland did in the regular season, but the Toronto Raptors, whose best players are Lowry and DeRozan, not LeBron and Kyrie Irving, the like actual legitimate international celebrities that they are. If that team has a late lead in Cleveland or it's just close, I think it's going to be extremely tense in there. And that's not to say that LeBron and Kyrie won't make the hero plays they need to at the end. I just think it'll be so fascinating just to see how that works if it's as good a game as we've been lucky enough to see last night in Toronto.
Yeah. Oh man, I hope we get a game that good tomorrow.
Me
night.
Too.
Just selfishly, I want to cover a game that good in person.
Yes.
Okay, let's do like 3 minutes on this Warriors Thunder game tonight. Matt and I talked about Stephen Adams' testicles a lot yesterday.
So, oh, I listened.
So we don't need to get into that.
It was a real balls to the wall podcast. That
it was. Thank you. So all right, Draymond didn't get suspended, which I agree with. On many levels, not just like, hey, I want to see him play in game four. Like, I didn't think he should be suspended. I like the upgrade to the flagrant two, and now he's got to be really worried about flagrant fouls moving forward, which I don't know that it'll change the way he plays, but
I don't think it can.
Yeah, I don't know that you can change the way Draymond plays. I think he just plays with that energy and that ferocity and that aggressiveness and hopes that it goes right for him. But, all right, this is it's really a must-win for both teams because the Warriors don't want to go down 3-1 and have to win three straight against the Thunder team, which has just been so good in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And the Thunder, you don't want to turn it into like, all right, well, two of the next three are at Oracle, and we got to win two of those. So, you know, you really want to go back up 3-1, which sounds obvious, but especially against this Warriors team because of the Oracle Arena, and I know they already won there once, but I don't know how many times you can flip that coin and hope that it comes up, you know, heads for you. I expect the Warriors to win, but I expect them to win game three too. And they got blitzed.
I have a question for you.
All right.
How much, if at all, do you expect to see the death lineup in this game?
A lot.
A lot?
Yep.
Because it got destroyed in the last
game. It did, and I think they'll say, all right, destroy it again.
Okay.
I do. Like, I don't think this Warriors team, not that they won't adjust, I don't think they're going to change who they are. I think we'll see it as much in game four as we saw in game three.
I kind of lean the other way. And I think the Warriors are set up in such a way that they can play any style.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And if I'm Kerr, I would seriously consider just staying big all game.
So you're saying go Bogut, Azili, Draymond.
Spates.
And Sean Livingston.
Sure.
That's your starting lineup.
Maybe Kevon Looney. I don't know. Oh, no, sure. He's not healthy, is he? He's not healthy. I would consider just having an actual center there all game. I would think if I was the Warriors, my number one concern, and it's a little bit different than their normal philosophy because their normal philosophy is embrace chaos. We are better at chaos than you are. But my number one concern is just not letting the Thunder get out in transition ever. And just doing absolutely everything I could to stop Westbrook from getting the ball with a head of steam or Durant, who, I mean, we all talk about how terrifying Westbrook is in transition. Like, Durant's like one of the best transition players in the entire league. Like,
he literally might be the best.
I think maybe points per possession he is. I could be wrong. But I would just do everything I can to get them into half court offense and take my chances there. And if that means you play Bogut and Azili all game, if that means you play them together, why not go crazy? I might look at that, you know, and maybe the Warriors are just so confident in their style and the way that they play that they go the other direction. They play a lot of death lineup.
Yeah.
But I just what the Thunder did to them when they were running in game three, I mean, I would just be having nightmares about that.
But I think you have to look at that as like a – if you're the Warriors, you have to be aware of it. You can't just dismiss it, but you have to kind of look at that as an outlier of like, look, when we play this lineup against anybody, it's destructive because they got the better of it in one game in which they just blitzed us. I don't know that you go away from it. Cause I think that shows a weakness for them. Not saying like, oh, now the Thunder are gonna be like, hey, they're not playing it. I think it shows a weakness for them internally of like, hey, this isn't who we are anymore. And I think that's why you can't do it.
I think there's something to be said for just being malleable and being like, yeah, this is who we are, but in this matchup, this is who we are, and we're going to find different ways to win. And
because what was that lineup in game two? Like, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I would assume that lineup did pretty decently because they destroyed the Thunder.
Yeah, I imagine it was better. I don't have the numbers in front of me either. I mean, we'll see. I will say that, like, if they go with the death lineup again, I think they do have to play more under control with that lineup, and Draymond has to be better at protecting the rim than he was, because the Thunder just did not seem afraid of driving against him. You and Matt talked about this with Dion Waiters just being like, yeah, I'm going to the rim and I'm going to jump and I'm going to score over you. And that's just kind of how it was. And Draymond was not good in the last game. I expect him to be better this time. But I think also they just have to be a lot more mindful of floor balance and having guys back. It doesn't mean you can't take quick shots, but if you take a quick shot, like, you have to be really disciplined.
It's got to be good form. If you're going to take a quick shot, it's got to be good form, and then it hasn't been good form.
And the rest of the team has to be aware of what's happening.
Right.
And aware of, like, where the hell Westbrook is and where Durant is and getting back. And I think there's a balance to be found there. They could stick with it and just play differently. But to me, if I put that lineup out there and it looks like it's going the same way, I'm ditching it quickly. And that feels really weird for me to say, because it's been, like, my favorite lineup to watch, like, ever.
Okay, I've got two quick prediction questions for you.
Yes.
Who wins game five?
Golden State.
Or no, game four, because we haven't gotten to game five yet. Who wins game four? Golden State?
Okay.
Over under 0.5 nut shots from Draymond Green to Stephen Adams.
I'm going under.
You're going under. No nut shots.
I mean, I'm just playing the law of averages here.
Okay.
Like, three games in a row.
That would be something.
That would be unprecedented, perhaps.
Okay. Over under 0.5 nut shots from Stephen Adams to Draymond Green.
Ooh. That's an interesting one. I'm going to go over.
I'll take the over as well.
Yeah.
I'm taking the over for both. I think we get them on back-to-back possessions.
Oh, my God.
And chaos ensues. Well, James, enjoy the Warriors Thunder game tonight. Enjoy the at least two more games of this Raptor season, if not more. And I will talk to you later.
Have fun in Believeland.